Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Our state parks highlight California's best natural jewels, and last year another one was added to the list, Dos Rios, which is the state's newest state park in a decade. These parks not only serve valuable environmental purposes, but also as cultural spaces for indigenous communities and tribes to gather materials and restore traditional practices, like basket weaving. Austin Stephen Knott is the director of tribal engagement at River Partners. That's a conservation nonprofit that partners with state restoration projects. And he joins us now to discuss the creation of the California Indian Basket Weavers Association, or CIBA. Welcome to Insight.
Hello. Ika Majuksus. My name's Austin. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful. Thank you for taking the time. I would love to just start off learning a little bit about yourself and your family's history and what led you to become a tribal engagement director with River Partners.
Yeah, so I grew up in the culture. I was raised in northern Sierra Miwok. My family's from Calaveras County. My mom is a documented basket maker. I only say documented because we didn't document. It was something that happened after colonization. And our family is one of those few families in the state that was able to hold on to our culture and our practices, even through colonization, through boarding schools, through all the ugly history of California.
Why is basket weaving such an important cultural tradition?
Basket weaving, it's more than just a craft. It's a connection. It's the materials, you know, they come from where our culture comes from. Our culture is based off the environment. Those connections to the environment, our language comes from the same place. So when you take all those things and you weave them together, it's putting something together more than just an item, right? It's a representation of who we are and where we come from.
Tell us a little bit of what the process is like. What have you learned from, you know, your mom and your elders?
So, you know, a lot of people come to my family, to my mom in particular, my aunties, to learn how to make baskets. A lot of people think that we're just going to throw some materials down in front of them and teach them how to weave. But it doesn't start there. It starts on the landscape. It starts with tending those plants, understanding those plants, when to gather them. And when I say when, there's, you know, a lot of people will just go out and collect materials. But there is a time that you collect materials after, you know, the birds are done nesting, after the insects are done doing what they're going to do with it. And then generally you harvest in the dormancy period when those plants are asleep. You can get them in the springtime as well. Things like willow, when we're using it for our foundation rods, you don't want to harvest it with the bark on, right? So you need to be able to slip that bark so you get it in the springtime when the plant's pushing its energy back up and those branches are full of moisture. So you can slip the bark off it and have the nice bare stick for your foundation rods. So it's teaching people to do basketry is more than just learning to weave. That's a very small part of it.
Yeah, it's well beyond a craft, as I'm learning from you. I mean, it's a relationship with the environment and the ecosystem. And I can see how you being part of River Partners, which is a nonprofit that is very passionate about restoration to the ecosystem. They're working in Dos Rios right now to restore the riparian forests in the area. And they've been on our show about this, that basket weaving is much more than just a skill, but it's the relationship you have with the environment.
Yeah. And I came to River Partners about 4.5 years ago. When I met them, it was at their end of season, which is where we get our entire staff together and we camp for 3 days and we talk about what went well in our projects, where we can improve in our projects. And then we generally bring in guest speakers to talk about something. And that year they happened to invite my mom and my aunties and myself to come talk about the cultural uses of the plants they've been putting in the ground over the last 20 plus years. And it was really one of those setback moments where they realized that you can't really do this work without bringing in the people that were guardians of the land, without bringing in those people that have the relationship with the plants. And, you know, growing up, it was kind of one of those things when we went to go gather materials, there was no access. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, CIBA kind of got together, one of many.
Because that organization has been around for decades, correct?
Yeah, my mom was one of the founding, or not one of the founding, she was one of the original board members. It started in the late 80s, around 1990. I just remember being a little kid running around all my aunties while they, you know, sat and weaved and talked. And, You know, that was some of my first big experiences with public being around, you know, our culture and really putting it out there for people to see. Because a lot of people don't realize that up until the 1970s, it was still illegal to practice these things, right? I mean, until the Religious Act passed for Native Americans. So there's this culture in California of hiding who we were. Sorry. until the last, you know, few decades, we're really starting to come out and show people that we're still here. We're still practicing, despite the best efforts to squash that.
I can completely understand why it would be so emotional for you. I mean, it's tied to your family and to generations. And the fact that this led you down a path of being with an organization that is restoring the loss of natural spaces in on public land, I can understand why you would want to ensure that Indigenous cultural practices are also part of this environmental restoration as well. They probably go hand in hand with each other.
Oh, I mean, 100%. You know, that historically, that's been one of the problems that we've had to keep a lot of these traditions alive is access, whether it's private property, state or federal property. People don't want you there. They don't want you, you know, touching the plants because they believe that their way is the right way, even though we have generations upon generations that prove otherwise. You know, you could look at modern forestry where we've managed for logging industries, and we're seeing the effects of that now, right? Because we've harvested all the old growth trees that were, you know, the ones that withstood the fire, that were there to make sure that we had generations to come after. And the riparian corridors are the same way, right? So we understood that, you know, maintaining landscapes through use of fire and other things promoted the growth of the plants that we wanted and needed for food, for culture, but it also helped to prevent, you know, catastrophic fires. So you didn't lose your entire landscape. Something else that, you know, through the knowledge that we pick up is that certain birds, certain animals want certain age growth, right? And if you have a forest that's all the same age, you start to see those birds and those animals disappear. And so through the use of fire and burning these landscapes, you don't burn everything. When we talk about cultural burns, it's not burning at high intensities, right? We're doing small spot fires that you may relight two or three times along the way. And it's a cool fire that's just kind of clearing the underbrush, right? And giving light to the floor where you get the growth of those plants that those animals that require that certain age of growth can find it.
When it comes to the restoration work that River Partners is doing, especially in connection to tribes and Indigenous communities, you helped implement, I believe, a native use garden at Dos Rios in the Central Valley. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so it's one of the first, very first projects I got when I came to River Partners. We had a small 3-acre piece in Dos Rios that it was through NRCS. And they said, look, River Partners, you're great at what you're doing, but what could you do to involve different communities in these properties? And Julie Rettner, our amazing president, came to me and said, hey, what could you do for Native communities? If I were to give you this little plot, what could you do? I said, I don't know. Let's do a Native use garden. She goes, explain. So I got my mom and my aunties to just kind of give me a list of plants that they would love access to. And we just made this a little 3-acre piece, you know, and that's how it started. But that little piece, that little 3 acres, has come to represent so much more. It's got the attention of a lot of officials in the state through the CANA, through state parks. And Armando Quintero, the first time we brought him there, the state parks director, he looked at me and he goes, when this becomes a state park, why would we just keep it this little 3 acres? Let's make the whole park available, right? And that's what I love, is that a small piece like that can really, you know, after hearing our stories and our access issues, really change the way people think.
Yeah.
Right. And like I said, that's what that piece has come to represent to me more, is that it's kind of an eye opener, right? It's changing the lens on, you know, cultural uses in California.
We only have about 30 seconds or so left, but I think it's important to acknowledge that Dos Rios is the newest state park in an area that doesn't really have state parks in the Central Valley. What has it meant for you to see a space like Dos Rios return to its natural state, restore Indigenous practices, but also introduce others to that space who have also been kept away and had barriers to public land?
You know, I look at the small community of Grayson, right? It's this landlocked little piece town out there that's it's a farming community. And they don't have anything out there. It reminds me of a small rancheria, small res, growing up, going to visit my grandparents. I mean, their only store is a quick stop, right? And when we brought them to Dos Rios, it was the community excitement, the fact that they have that and the ownership they've taken and the excitement in their community. I mean, they have a elders group they've got together that come over there and they do yoga and all these fun things and go on hikes. So to be able to see that and they just see the excitement in the community alone when I go out there on the weekends and there's just more and more people showing up and people are excited every time we open a new trail. It really, you know, at first I was a little hesitant because it was kind of my private park for 4 years. but, you know, I really feel and see the importance of that park for the communities.
Austin Stephen Nod is the Director of Tribal Engagement at River Partners. Thank you so much for joining us, Austin.
Thank you.
And we've been talking about efforts to revitalize native plant species used by basket weavers in places like the new Dos Rios State Park. Have a great day, everyone.